From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey, and the President of the United States is 81 years old. He's been old for a while now, but the issue has been gaining salience as polls show a strong majority of voters say it's a major concern. Then, last week, it got an injection of rocket fuel in the form of a report by Special Counsel Robert Hur. Hur had been investigating Biden for mishandling classified documents and said the president would not be charged. His report drew multiple distinctions with former President Trump. Biden cooperated with investigators. Trump did not. Biden returned documents voluntarily. Trump did not. And now Biden has been cleared, while Trump is facing 7 federal criminal charges in the classified documents case alone. But those points were seen as secondary by many commentators and news outlets, which focused on Hur's description of Biden as a sympathetic, well-meaning, elderly man with a poor memory. That line has yielded a metric ton of analysis and discussion. What does this mean for the election? Is Biden too old to run? And why don't voters care more about Trump's age? After all, he's only 3.5 years younger than Biden. I've read a lot of reporting and commentary on this, and one of the pieces that stood out to me was by Nicholas Grossman, writing in The Bulwark. He says, "What's most striking about this discussion is how lopsided it is. It raises concerns about Biden, but does not weigh them against concerns about Trump. Elections, after all, are about weighing trade-offs." Today, we're going to get into some of those trade-offs with Grossman himself. Nicholas Grossman is a political science professor at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. He's a senior editor at the news outlet ARC Digital and the author of the book Drones and Terrorism. Nick, welcome back to The 21st Show. Thanks for being with us.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
So let's start with age and, oh, I should say, listeners, we got a ton of feedback from you on this. We reached out to our texting group. I will share some of those responses as we go along. Most of them fell into the category of saying, yes, Biden's too old, but given Trump, you have to vote Biden. We're going to hear more from you. There were some other views that came in as we go along. If you want to join our conversation, though, the number to do that is 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. All right, Nick, let's start with this question of age and mental acuity. Your piece argues that when comparing Biden and Trump on those points, it's essentially a wash. Make that case.
Right. More or less, both of them are clearly old. Biden's 81, Trump's 77. My parents are in their lower 70s, and they have seemed older to me recently. You know, all due respect, Mom and Dad, but it's true, and have seemed older. And so both of them are old. Both of them occasionally say stuff that's kind of incoherent or forget what they're saying or maybe mix up a name. So Biden referred to the leader of Egypt as the leader of Mexico, and Trump had referred to the leader of Hungary as the leader of Turkey. And so they are displaying these sort of age slowdowns. And since that is, and I suppose different people can probably claim one is, you know, seeming slower than the other or seeming older than the other. But overall, that part is fairly similar about them. And the fact that they are so different on so many other things, on, for example, in this special counsel report, on things like respect for rule of law, of risk to information security, that the biggest takeaway from that report to me was that Biden was had cooperated with investigators, but also had decently less sensitive national security information, while Trump was being, at absolute best, being very generous, extremely careless with some very sensitive national security information, and then deliberately didn't give it back and kept lying and trying to hide it. And so even on that one topic, that would be a bigger difference that would signal that Trump would be riskier. And so while it would make a lot of sense to me if we had an 81-year-old presidential candidate against, say, a 40-something-year-old presidential candidate, of saying, oh, well, age and mental acuity is a big difference here. In this particular election, we have drastic differences between the two candidates. Another one is the first time that we're going to have effectively, should the U.S. be in NATO on the ballot? There used to be a bipartisan consensus. That is world changing. That's so much more important. And so the fact that we would be focused on age when both the candidates are old and both the candidates are showing some signs of slowing down in some ways mentally, not that either of them is not there, but slowing down, it seems absurd to me, crazy, that we would focus on the age issue as the thing that matters most in the election.
And I do want to come back to those stakes, right? NATO, Ukraine, Israel, Gaza, other world hotspots, because that is something that does get short shrift in how we choose our presidents. But you also made an interesting point in the article about just remembering dates in particular. There was this focus on Biden, you know, having trouble remembering the dates that he was vice president or left the vice presidency and the death of his son. And it made me stop and think. My grandfather died about a decade ago, but would I swear in court that it was 2013 or 2014? No, I honestly cannot remember the exact year that it was, and I would have to do a little thinking about that. You talked about this as well in your piece.
Yeah, same thing for me, that I thought about it, and I don't know off the top of my head the exact year of the most important deaths in my life. I am able to reason back to it. I can figure it out. So, for example, I remember that my oldest son, who was 1.5 at the time, interrupted me when I was speaking at my grandfather's funeral. And so that he ran on the stage and everybody laughed, and that memory is seared in my mind, and so I know how old he is now, so I can reason back to then when my grandfather died. But I don't actually remember that specific date. And I think especially when it comes to tragedy. So, you know, my grandfather was in his 90s. We expected it with something like a parent losing a child, that it seems very reasonable to me, in fact, probably more typical, that it's sort of a blur. It's a lot of emotion. You know it happened some time ago and could figure it out, but don't have it right off the top of your head. And that I also, when I think of organizing my life, I think about things like now that I'm at the University of Illinois, before that I was at the University of Iowa. I don't think about it really in terms of years. I think about it where I was then and there. And so Biden saying things like, oh, that was during my vice presidency or after my vice presidency, instead of having the date off the top of my top of his head, didn't strike me as much of an age issue or as a serious problem that, say, we need to consider. And if anything, I thought that that was one of the cheaper shots in the report, that the special counsel Hur was supposed to determine whether he thought a prosecutable crime had taken place. And he decided that it didn't. And there's some element on saying, oh, I thought Biden would defend himself in court as perhaps old and forgetful, which granted, to prove these sort of things in court, it's not based on what do you remember today? Is there documentation that you did it on purpose then? And so getting that in there, maybe you can make a prosecutorial case for, oh, this is why I'm not prosecuting. But to get into issues about, you know, he didn't know the exact date. I'm in my 40s and I don't know the exact date. That didn't strike me as such a big deal. Not that the age issue is a non-issue, but that that part specifically is not that concerning to me.
And I can't remember if it was your piece or one of the other many, many pieces I read about this. But, you know, former President Trump himself said, I don't recall, many times during depositions during his own presidency. And we've certainly seen that with other elected officials. I want to share some of the comments we got. There were some people who said no on Biden. It's Sarah in Rockford. It's not about age so much as clarity, articulation, and processing speed. I know older men and women who are sharp as a knife, but Biden is visibly slowing down, can't stay awake, and slurs his speech. He needs to retire and enjoy his family. Charles in Champaign simply said, too old, corrupt, and incompetent. I'm not sure where the can't stay awake idea came from. I haven't seen that. He certainly has always had a bit of a speech pattern. He was a stutterer when he was a young man, and it's pretty well known, I think, that he has sort of tried to compensate for that. There are people who are yes on Biden. Ann in Urbana said, I wish Biden was younger. However, I think he's done an amazing job amid great adversity, and I believe he would continue to do so if reelected. The economy's booming. How many times has the Dow Jones broke its all-time record since he took office? Julia near Bloomington Normal said, I would tell those so concerned about Biden's age that Trump is worse cognitively, plus he is a horrible human being. Thank you for sharing those comments. Let's go to the phones at 800-222-Hold on. Okay. We're going to go to the phones now. I think our technical issue is resolved. Bill is calling from Central Illinois on line 4. Bill, are you with us?
I am indeed.
Thank you for calling in.
The thing that bothers me about this whole conversation between Trump and Biden and their mental capacities and everything else is that it seems to me, as you listen to the news media and the radio and this, that, and the other, that a lot of the commentators are not qualified to speak on this. I unfortunately have a family member who I'm taking care of who is diagnosed with moderate Alzheimer's. And we went to a neurologist, and we had all the tests, and we did all these things. And we get this report from a lawyer in the Justice Department who he's very qualified to answer the questions of, did this person do something wrong with documents? But is he qualified to answer the question of whether this person is in cognitive decline? I don't think so.
Bill, that is a great,
My question
go ahead.
Is, yeah. why don't they have these people take, you know, these major candidates, take the actual cognitive test medically with a neurologist and have the results released publicly?
Bill, thank you so much for calling in. I'm sorry what you're going through with your family member with Alzheimer's. I hope you the best for you and them. But that is an interesting point. Nick, what do you think of that? I think we've already seen that President Biden has said he's not going to take such a test. President Trump sort of vaguely had this man-woman camera TV, if people remember that. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so Trump has bragged that he took a what amounts to a basic dementia test that they show you like a picture of a giraffe and say, what is this? And he said, it's a giraffe, which, you know, my five-year-old can do. And on top of that, some neurologists have said that Trump is not actually describing the test accurately in the first place. But either way, it's not a sort of achievement. It's like, you know, if you get knocked out and they say, how many fingers am I holding up, and you get it right, you know, yes, that's better than getting it wrong, but it doesn't mean that you are necessarily qualified to be president. I relate to said the caller's experience in that I had, and I'm sure I'm not the only one in this case, of my grandmother had dementia for a number of years, for maybe 15 years. And it got pretty serious. And she was always more energetic and more talkative than my grandfather, who was sharp and with it to the end, but was more reserved and quieter and, say, maybe didn't put on as big a show or as big of energy. So to me and others, I think, who've experienced something like that, being more energetic and louder does not necessarily mean being younger or more with it. But I agree that it was strange to see what amounts to almost a medical level diagnosis from people that have no qualifications for it. And mostly what you see with the commentary is not anybody saying, oh, medical professionals say this person is incapable. It's more a case of, well, it just seems, you know, like maybe it slipped a little to me. Maybe Biden has slipped a little as far as I'm seeing it. And then what you see, especially with a lot of the commentary, is more second order. It's not, oh, I'm a neurologist and I'm concerned, or even I heard from a neurologist and I'm concerned. It's more that, well, other people might be concerned about the age, and I, you know, this is, say, speaking as a pundit, a bunch of pundits are saying, oh, well, in that case, I need to bring it up because other people are worried about it, and it gets into this circular thing with why are they worried about it? Because you keep talking about it. Why you keep talking about it? Because they're worried about it, and never actually getting to something substantial, something substantive. I've never heard a single example of something like the U.S. made a mistake because Biden is old. Here's how that happened because of his age. A younger president would not have made that mistake. Mm. There's never been a specific example, any policy, something the U.S. would have done differently. And in part, that is because the main job of president is not thinking quickly on their feet as if they're on a game show. It is meeting with advisors and making an informed judgment about what the country should do. And that is something that people can maybe take a little more time with and input advice on. And so the skill of being able to be really sharp on your feet might be good for campaigning, but it's not necessarily an important part of being president. And yet that ends up being the focus, in large part because that seems to be the one thing that either Biden opponents or Democrats that are worried about whether Biden is going to win the election, that seems to be the one thing that they think is actually a downside to him, as opposed to the very long list of policies and personal character that they think are downsides about Trump.
Yeah, and we can come back to that. But let's actually, I have an example, some tape of this phenomenon you're talking about. And this is your piece ran in The Bulwark, which, for anyone who may not be familiar with that, was started by a group of never Trump conservatives. I consume a fair amount of Bulwark content. A lot of people there have been growing increasingly concerned about Biden's age. And Democratic strategist James Carville was on their flagship podcast earlier this week. Let's listen to what he had to say.
85% of the people think Biden is too old. I can't say, well, we need to pivot to the real issues. Let's talk about it. No, his age is a real issue. You can't pivot from it. You can't distract from it. You can't say, this is just Fox making this up. You know, it's the caravan, or it's, you know, somebody going.
Selfie stick,
a bathroom. Who's, you know, yeah. It's actually a legitimate issue that is on people's minds in a huge, not plurality, majority of Democrats. And you can't wish it away.
What do you think of that? It's something, you know, overwhelming number of people are worried about it. You can't wish it away.
Yeah, but also we're not wishing it away. That, I mean, we're talking about it here. I'd say this was the number one issue in the American media and political discourse over the last week. When I was looking, so the New York Times had four different columns on it and multiple newsletter entries on it. And they had headline news articles and news analysis on it. And they had a lead editorial on it. And I went and looked back and they had a lead editorial on it in last year, sometime in the middle of the year. I looked back at some of my own writing and I was critical of Biden as being potentially too old in 2019 when the Democrats were thinking of nominating somebody else. So a lot of this sounds like, again, that circular logic of you have to talk about the thing that we're talking about incessantly about over and over. Like, yes, we know you have to talk about it. You can't pretend it away. No, of course not. You can't pretend it away. I certainly don't want to pretend it away. I also am concerned that he's too old. It's just that in this particular circumstance, he's running against somebody who is also too old, plus a lot of other things.
All right. And we're gonna get into those other things when we come back, and we are going to try then to do what I hope public radio does, which is pull back and broaden the lens on this, put this in greater context, and talk about what some of the stakes of this election are, particularly for the expertise of our guest today, who is Nicholas Grossman, political science professor from the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. More to come after a short break. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about the elephant in the room, if you will, the antlers on the head of the likely Democratic nominee for president, as one commentator has put it. And that is the fact that President Biden is 81 years old. He's not getting younger. And a lot of voters say they are concerned about that. They are more concerned about that, they say, than the fact that his likely opponent, former President Trump, is just 3.5 years younger than Biden and is also facing civil and criminal liability in multiple investigations from the federal government and different state agencies. And we are talking about all of this with Nicholas Grossman, who is a professor of political science at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, senior editor at ARC Digital, and the author of the book Drones and Terrorism. He recently had a piece on this subject in The Bulwark, sort of reflecting on the fact that there's all this supposed concern about Biden, but it doesn't have the context of the fact that Biden has an opponent, a likely opponent at least, and what some of those trade-offs are. We heard from a lot of you on this. Most of the commentary ran in the vein that Biden is too old, but given Trump, you have to vote for him. Steve and Mattoon said, I would prefer younger candidates. That said, this election is too important. We have to stop fascist, racist, insurrectionist, criminal Trump. Christopher in Brimfield said, I agree he is too old, but with that said, I would vote for him over Trump any day. And Joe in Savoy left us this voicemail.
Yes, Biden is 81. That's not taking anything away from him. Trump is 77. I think comparatively, both of them are old men. And I think Biden has done a good job. I mean, the presidency is not just one man. The presidency is a bunch of people working together for the betterment of the United States of America. And from what I see, Donald J. Trump is trying to do is that he's trying to put people who don't have the best interest of the people at hand. And I'd take Biden any day. Yes, he's 81. And yes, he's supportive of the Israeli bombardment of Gaza, but I'd still take him. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks for that call, Joe. 800-222-9455 if you want to join us on air today. 800-222-9455. We'll be with this topic for about the next 14 minutes or so. Nicholas Grossman, Nick, you have a great chart in your story in The Bulwark, and I thought it was really useful, right? It brings a lot of context to this conversation. There are two columns comparing presidential candidate problems, excluding policy positions. God forbid we talk about policy. But I thought we could read down the list. I'll read from the Trump column an entry, and then you read the comparable line in the Biden column, okay? All right. So Trump, number one, he's old.
Biden, he's old.
Okay. Trump has a shady son who doesn't work in government.
Biden has a shady son who doesn't work in government.
All right. Trump empowered an apparently corrupt daughter and son-in-law.
Biden's old.
Okay. Trump pocketed money from foreign interests?
Biden is old.
Okay. Trump violated the Constitution in an attempt to extort a leader of a U.S. partner, that's Ukraine, and was impeached for it?
Biden has a shady son that doesn't work in government, and he's old.
Okay. Trump attempted coup to cling to power after losing re-election, impeached for it, indicted for it?
Biden's old.
Trump found legally liable for sexual abuse?
Biden is old.
Okay. Trump, criminal liability relating to taking classified documents and storing them at Mar-a-Lago, for which he was indicted?
Biden was cleared of charges for anything related to something like that, and also he's old.
Okay. And finally, Trump called for termination of the U.S. Constitution.
Whereas Biden is old.
Okay. So I think we've made our point there. You made your point excellently, and we've brought it to life on the radio. This has been 21st Show Playhouse Theater. The NPR political commentator Ron Elving has said Biden's age is basically Hillary's emails all over again. What do you think of that?
So in a way, yes, in a way, no. So I think the way that it's similar is that we have unequal candidates and we have a media environment that really likes treating the presidential race as a close contest, as a horse race, as between basically two equals and tries to keep them in balance. And so with Hillary, the email issue was the big thing that was negative about her that they had. And so they also balanced that out effectively against many different things relating to Trump that were each on their own perhaps equal or greater scandals. The part where I think it's different is that I teach national security issues. I'm among those people who said that the Hillary email thing was not a non-issue. It was blown out of proportion, but was definitely not a non-issue. You know, she was wrong to do it and was right to be criticized for it. And whereas with the Biden age thing, there is nothing concrete about it. It's a fact that he's old. It's not an issue of behavior. It's not a choice he made. It has nothing to do with insight in his character. And on top of that, the things in 2016 where the election was Trump was an unknown. And so he didn't have a record. There was decently less to cover in terms of the substantial parts of the election, because at most it was him promising things and nobody really knew whether he would do it or not because he had never been in politics before. Whereas now we have Trump had been president for 4 years and has been awfully open about what he wants to do and plans to do for the last few. And so it is less reasonable than compared to 2016 to make it where the press or various politics followers are downplaying or dismissing all those other things that we now have a record for and effectively balancing them out to this one thing that they keep on turning into a bigger scandal than it actually is. Although, as I say that, I don't want to say that it's a non-issue because I thought Hillary's emails was an issue. Biden's age is an issue. It's things to consider. It just doesn't get nearly as much play as, or sorry, it's widely out of balance in terms of the focus on it.
One of the antidotes, I think, to this sort of obsession with President Biden's age as the main campaign issue in and of itself is to keep our eye on the ball of what's really at stake in this election. And the CBS political journalist John Dickerson, who I greatly admire, he gave a really great talk on this last week at Harvard. His main message was that we ought to focus more on the presidency than the campaign. We as political journalists. And he put his message into practice last Friday in an appearance on PBS's Washington Week. One of the other people on the program asked Dickerson if it was legitimate to talk about Biden's age, and this is what he had to say.
Of course, it's a legitimate issue to talk about his age and to talk about Donald Trump's age. But the really important presidential issue that came out of this report about Joe Biden's handling of classified materials to me is, what does it say about the behavior of Joe Biden and Donald Trump? They are both accused of similar things. Trump with many more classified documents and more seriously classified. To me, the most important question from a presidential perspective is, what's the most recent behavior tell us about how they would behave in office? And that's with respect to what happened when they found out they had these documents. Biden's team found out they had the documents and went to the National Archives and said, oops, we have these. Please come investigate. They participated willingly in the investigation, and Joe Biden sat down for 5 hours. By contrast, the former President Trump didn't tell anybody he had these materials he wasn't supposed to have. When they came asking with a subpoena, according to the indictment, he went through a series of acts directing people to hide the material gave some material, didn't give other material, then went through an effort to hide it again. Why is this important? It goes to the habits of mind in office, which is a constant tension between doing things for yourself and doing things by the standards and norms of the office of the presidency. So this goes to mindset about how they would behave with 4 years in office. Right. That, I think, is the most important question.
All right, Nick. Nicholas Grossman, professor at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. You spend a lot of time thinking and writing and teaching about national security and terrorism and foreign affairs. And so let's talk about some of the stakes of this election. Should we start with Ukraine?
Sure. So we have a clear distinction between the two presidential candidates and, as a result, the parties they lead on the Ukraine war, that the stance of Biden and the Democrats and some Republicans in Congress, including, for example, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell. So there's a bipartisan part to this, but especially say the Biden position is that the United States should support Ukraine against Russia, that Russia's aggression was wrong, and that if Russia succeeds in Ukraine, that what is likely to happen is Russia will then use that as a building block to menace Europe, including potentially NATO allies, which could eventually lead to the United States being dragged into a big war. Whereas Trump's approach to it is to try to push the Ukrainian, to try to cut off the Ukrainians, to weaken them, to then push them to give Russia what it wants. And that these, would have to note, are both potentially paths to peace, that if you give the aggressive foreign dictator whatever he wants, at least for a little while, you might get peace. And we are facing a direct difference in that, in which, without exaggeration, I think the future of the international system spins on, that this is the biggest war in the 21st century. It's the biggest war in the post-Cold War world. Effectively, the rules of the road at the highest level are being established now in Ukraine about whether dictators can grab land from other countries and redraw borders by force. And people like China looking at Taiwan or other countries are watching this very closely and seeing what the outcome is. And Biden and Trump want to shape the outcome in very different directions, which will set up a lot of then what comes in the future.
Let's go to the phones. 800-222-9455. Danny is calling from Urbana on line four.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to point out there's a big difference in their communication style between Biden and Trump. If you're a person with a stutter, you're probably very used to taking your time and putting together your thoughts before you try to express them. Whereas if you're used to being aggressive and sort of braggadocious in your communication, it's a lot easier to, like, put out a bunch of words, not necessarily content, and come off confident, whereas Biden would not, but they might be experiencing the exact same thing and just reading differently. But confidence doesn't translate into competence every time.
That is such a great point, Danny. Thank you so much for sharing that and calling in today. I appreciate that. You know, yeah, the communication style is definitely something that is different among President Biden and former President Trump. I do want to stick with, because one of the things they've been communicating very clearly about is NATO, and that's something you mentioned. And this is, we start in Ukraine, now we broaden out to all of Europe. What are the stakes for NATO in this election?
So NATO is the world's biggest, most powerful alliance. It accounts for all the NATO members, account for about 70% of all the world's military spending. And this has been, with this alliance, is the way that the United States was able to keep Western and a lot of Central Europe free throughout the Cold War. It is the way that U.S. nuclear weapons are able to deter invasion of an ally like, say, Poland or Estonia, and also a way that then Poland is discouraged from trying to get its own nuclear weapons because it can rely on U.S. support. And the alliance has helped the United States in various things also outside of Europe. The one time that they invoked their Article 5, which is an attack on one is an attack on all, is after 9/11, and NATO countries all helped with the U.S. in Afghanistan. Currently, Ukraine is not in NATO, but Russia attacked Ukraine, in fact, partially for that reason. If you notice, Russia has not attacked a NATO country. What had been bipartisan consensus for the United States for really back to the late 1940s, that NATO made the U.S. stronger and safer and more prosperous, is now for the first time something that we have disagreements on in the election, of where Trump has characterized NATO as if it is like a mafia protection racket, where other countries pay the United States some sort of fee or dues in exchange for protection, which is just not how it works at all. It's a mutually beneficial defense agreement. We put our troops there, you put our troops here whenever there are one issue or another. And there have been something going back really to the 1960s of Americans complaining that European countries don't spend enough of their money on their own defense capabilities, which had been in 2014, they set as a projection of a 2% target for the future. And some of them started meeting it more in 2022. And you know what the big thing that caused that in 2014 was when Russia took Crimea from Ukraine and started war in parts of Ukraine in the east. And then in 2022 was when they did this big invasion. And so what gets the Europeans to spend more on defense when they are scared of Russia? By Trump saying that just recently he said he would encourage Russia to do, in this quote, do whatever the hell they want to any of the countries that did not pay the United States for protection, you know, so it is as if it's like a protection racket. And if that happens, then this is Russia's main foreign policy goal, that their foreign policy dream is to break up NATO. And if we ever get into a situation where, even if the treaty still exists in paper, if the United States shows that it is not willing to defend a NATO member and not help, then NATO effectively collapses. And then the risks of things like World War III rise considerably. So that's one at least I'm very worried about. But we're seeing a difference in the presidential election, and the public will decide whether America should stay in or not.
Yeah, we are really short on time. I do want to get to one of the biggest, maybe the stake of this election. You had another piece in the Bulwark maybe a month or two ago, basically saying that Trump's reelection could mean the end of American democracy. Maybe you even said would mean it. I think, you know, people listening to public radio have certainly heard that argument. People who read the Bulwark are aware of that argument. But there are many, many Americans who are just now beginning to sort of, oh, there's an election this year. Oh, yeah, I guess I should think about that. You know, and they are going to say, Trump was in office for 4 years. America survived. It was fine. You know, as best as you can in a minute and a half, Nick, what is different this time?
Sure. Well, the short part is that many of the things that you see going wrong now in the world were in part set up by bad decisions during the Trump administration. So an example of this is part of, not all, but part of the blame for the Gaza war goes onto the Trump administration's poor handling of the Middle East and approach towards Israel. He was in office for 4 years, and then he lost the election, and then he lied about it incessantly and committed a bunch of crimes trying to overthrow the Constitution and trying to overthrow the government. And it sounds almost crazy when I say that, but that is exactly what happened, in that if a president loses reelection and then stays president anyway, that's the end of the Constitution. The Constitution says the exact opposite of that, that if you lose re-election, you leave. The people are the sovereign. The people have, you know, we the people are the ones who have control. And the fact that we already saw Trump lose an election and then try to stay in office, and that the Republican Party has rallied around his, in defense of his various crimes, the party's main platform is effectively this one guy should be put above the law and allowed to do whatever the hell he wants, Constitution be damned. And if that's the case, then we don't really have a constitutional democracy anymore. And since we already saw him try to stay in power, I see no reason why we should expect that he wouldn't simply try to do it again, except he'd be in better position and better prepared to try.
Nicholas Grossman, a stark place on which to leave this conversation. But thank you so much for being with us today on The 21st Show.
Thanks for having me.
More to come after a short break. Stay with us.